The AFLW season began on the weekend, and a lot of our conversation last week was around momentum, goodwill factor, the criticism, the scepticism, the evolution. It seemed like it was a heartwarming weekend, a return almost to the core of where it started. This was Steve Hocking on the start to the AFLW season with Gary and Tim this morning.
I think one of the most pleasing things for us is just the work that the players have put in over another pre-season. You'd certainly see the improvement in their skill execution, and the other part too is just how they took care of one another. It's one of the first times that we haven't had players reported in a round of AFLW, so it's a really good start for that season.
It was a terrific start. Channel 7 commentator Sam Lane is again with me, as she was to build the season up last week. Sam, welcome back to SEN.
Thanks, Jared. It's good to be back, and it's nice to hear Steve Hocking saying those words out loud, rather than if we cast our minds back to this time last year when the news was that the AFL was sending negative vibes out about what they'd seen in round one. So this is a big tick just from the outset.
You did forecast that last Thursday. So tell me, it felt like a great weekend for the competition, with echoes as to how it all started in season one. What was your broad perspective of it?
I'd agree with that. I think if you look at results first up, I mean, we had close games, say what you like about the actual scorecards in terms of number of goals and points. You had games that kept you engrossed until the end in terms of the margins. I really agree that the skill level went up. Brisbane really struck me as slick. I was really impressed by them in their first up win, and they knocked off GWS, who have been touted as a team that could win the flag this year. I guess they're the results. Sort of those broader brush points are, and it's sort of easy to forget, we've just had two AFL clubs essentially join something that they've been impatient to join for 3 years. So that's North Melbourne and Geelong. And I cast my mind back to a comment that Peter Gordon made after season one, the president of the Bulldogs. He said that he didn't realise until the Women's League and his team debuted in season one that he didn't realise that he hadn't felt his club was whole. He felt that once its women's team debuted, he had a whole club. And so if you just consider that fact for North Melbourne and Geelong, this is a very profound happening.
The pictures out of Geelong and the still shots in particular, and I think I've said this before, as my daughters have been waiting to barrack for a team in the competition, having been absolutely keen on it from the outset. But without Geelong in there, we have a rule at home that if you don't barrack for Geelong, Santa doesn't come. And so I sort of presume that spread to their view of AFLW. Did you think it had echoes of that first night at Princes Park?
Yeah, I did. The crowd was just shy of what Brian Cook was hoping for. He was convinced they'd get 20,000. It was 18,730, just off the top of my head, or 18,429 anyway. Look, I don't think we need to sort of be concerned about that just marginally being below 20,000. It's enormous when that many people turn up in a community and watch a new team debut. Even better when that team who has invested particularly in local talent, Geelong has taken that route in terms of the way that they recruited for their first women's team, when it wins and it knocked off Collingwood by 1 point. When the number one draft pick, Nina Morrison, is a standout, that's also very exciting. But again, to that bigger picture, yes, that daughters, sons, dads, mums and everything in between who barrack for Geelong now have another side to follow. And there are some incredible pictures, particularly from that Geelong-Collingwood match that started the season. And I'm talking, we can tweet them and retweet them, but I'm talking about young girls in the crowd waving their flags and high-fiving new heroes. And look, anyone's probably a bit game to be getting into a Twitter conversation with a former colleague of mine, Rowan Connolly, from The Age, but he did put something online about, you know, how that had moved him and made a point about young girls having heroes now to follow and aspire to be. And I couldn't help myself. I'm usually sort of a lover, not a fighter on Twitter. I just sort of watch rather than comment. But I did just sort of add something on to Rowan's point that it actually, what AFLW also does is give footy dads, and you're one, Jared, the chance to be a footy dad that they might not have been. Because previously, of course, if you'd only had, if you'd had girls and not boys, you didn't have that opportunity, I guess, as a footy dad to encourage your daughter to aspire to the elite level competition that we now have. So this isn't just for girls and women. This really is impacting on families and regardless of gender.
My girls are a bit shy on the tackling side of things and their prospects of following that sort of career. If this does resonate with you and you'd like to contribute, 1300 736 736, you can text 0433 98 11 16. The story of the weekend from the on-field perspective, Sam, was North Melbourne. And this had been hinted at and this had been tipped, but they were pretty ruthless.
Yeah, 36 points, and that was the margin they beat Carlton by, and it led Carlton's new coach, Daniel Harford, to call it a comprehensive mauling, which not a pair of words that any coach wants to say after round one, but Daniel Harford was honest and he was right. That is a huge margin in this competition when you consider that every other game, the greatest margin was actually Fremantle beating Melbourne by 4 points. The rest were 2 points, 1 point and 1 point. North Melbourne, I'm excited about them, and the reason there's a real dynamic off the field and among the players and coaches of the entire AFLW talking about and judging North Melbourne. I think I want to call them the punk team of the competition. North has been aggressive legally in terms of going out and just raiding the lists of the other clubs. They have therefore assembled very brilliantly, actually, some of the biggest names in the competition, led by Emma Carney, who is their captain and the reigning best and fairest player of the competition, the AFLW. She won that award last year. And they fired Emma King, Emma Carney, Jess Duffin, and King and Duffin left Collingwood. Moana Hope also left Collingwood. I mean, North Melbourne just came out and put paid to any concern that, oh, well, how will these big personalities and big names actually gel? How long will that take under new coach Scott Gowans, et cetera? Well, I don't know what the progression is from gelling. They didn't just gel. They were singing on the field, and goodness me, they really humbled Carlton in Hobart. And that's another point. AFLW in round one of season three has gone to a new state in Tassie. So this is another major milestone in this still infant competition.
Do you think the rest of the competition will have looked at North Melbourne and seen, I mean, it's literally something new, but seen something new in the way that that the game is being played?
Yeah, I think definitely in terms of the way that a list can be assembled and come together. I mean, we will wait and see what happens. Of course, it's one round, but it at the moment, it looks like they've been very, very clever in assembling the list that they have, and there's no reason, barring injury, that they wouldn't plough on in this fashion because... talent is what wins games as long as it's working well together. And I think I mentioned to you last week I'd spent a bit of time at North Melbourne, and what struck me was just the group was having a lot of fun but also just really switched into mode the moment things got serious Dennis Armfield, a former West Coast turned Carlton player, is a key driver behind the scenes with the coaching team, and they look to be doing exactly what their coaches are telling them, and the result spoke for itself, really, after their first outing.
There was a great spread in the scoring. Obviously, Adelaide botched their game particularly, yep. 1-11. The 9 goals yep. to 8, so the dynamic around Fremantle and Melbourne. So that's a headline catcher. Was there something yes. in that game? Was there a different dynamic? Was there something to take from that? Yep. I guess the experience with WBBL was the progression in scoring, which is now far advanced in the season, just gone from where it started, and whether that will be mirrored in what happens with AFLW.
Yes, I wasn't at Casey, and that's where that game took place on Sunday, so I've only read about it and watched on a small phone where you can, you know, rewatch these things because of the wonders of the internet. But the people, I suppose, that I took most notice of in terms of commentators and observers who were at the game, what they were really commenting, and it was hailed, in fact, by a co-commentator of mine at Channel 7, Jason Bennett, who I think has seen every AFLW game that's ever been played. he's a meticulous researcher, and actually Jason made the comment afterwards that he thought it was the best game of AFLW he'd ever seen. And what really stands out, I think, is and what we haven't seen so much in the competition so far is just the simple sounding factor of a momentum swing. So often what we found in AFLW games, because of the limited times, I mean, these quarters go for all of 10 minutes. The game is very much abbreviated compared to the men's that we know at elite level. There were momentum swings in this game between Melbourne and Fremantle, and that's exciting when a team can be behind but come back, and then the ledger turns again. So this is what commentators were talking about afterwards, and it sounds like it would have been a ripper to be at, albeit one where I did read in a sort of a colourful postscript that it was so hot and there was such a lack of shade that I think the AFL actually had to resort to erecting some kind of makeshift shade apparatus with the use of tea towels. So, you know, on the one hand, we're kind of at Geelong Stadium with almost 20,000 people. You know, a day later, we're out at Casey with some kind of tea towel tent happening. So, yeah, there are gaps in this still, but in some ways it's that community, everyone pitch in and we just make do attitude that is really refreshing, and it's why people who are going to these games are going again.
What are the trigger points of week two, Sam?
Well, I'll start on Friday night, and we've talked a little bit about the Kangaroos. GWS were knocked off by Brisbane on Sunday in round one, but they meet at Drummoyne Oval, so it's the first time that AFLW is coming to Sydney for this season, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that. GWS will want to bounce back, will want to live up to some of the hype that's been around them and the view, and I've been one that's held it, that they will be premiership contenders this year. Well, they are going to meet the side that sort of, you know, had the biggest win, the 6-goal win in round one. So I think that'll be a beauty to kick off proceedings for round two. That is at 7:15 at Drummoyne Oval. Then Saturday, and I can't wait for this. This is our match, our first match on Channel 7 on the doubleheader for Saturday. Footy's going back to Vic Park, Jared, in a way that Vic Park, and it's seen a lot of things over the years, but it has never seen AFLW. The Pies are hosting Melbourne. It's at 4:45 local time in Melbourne, and I suggest that quite beyond a football match, it might also be a bit of a social event. Vic Park and those parts these days, you know, it's a pretty good place to be in Melbourne, and I think the crowd will be pretty good and enjoy what's on offer in terms of being able to watch a game, but also just enjoy yourself in that kind of community kind of spirit. So that's at 4:45. That's the Channel 7's first game. That'll also be on 7 Plus and 7 Mate. And that will lead into the Saturday night game. And I also pick this as a beauty. Western Bulldogs are hosting the Cats. That's at the Witten Oval. And of all the grounds, Witten Oval is one I just have loved attending to watch AFLW. If you want to, if you're sort of uninitiated in terms of going to an AFLW game, I highly recommend Witten Oval. They've sort of got the food trucks. It's a really cool environment. I think match one, actually, and probably beyond it, Peter Gordon was even serving in one of the kiosks. So he really rolled his sleeves up and got involved in the vibes, probably just calming his nerves. But the Bulldogs will host the Cats, and I'm going to be interested in how the Cats, and they are a young Cats team, turn up and sort of they enter that kind of less welcoming cauldron of Witten Oval. So that'll be a good one. Then Sunday we've got Carlton hosting the Adelaide Crows. Crows being pipped, Carlton on the rebound after being mauled, in the words of their own coach. And then Fremantle hosting the Brisbane Lions in Fremantle to round out the round by, well, it'll be late Sunday afternoon Eastern Standard Time.
Sam, thank you for the insight into what's been and what's coming. Yeah, a terrific starting point for Season 3.
Thanks for the chat, Jared, and looking forward to the next round of it.